This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Welcome to this session. Maybe before I begin, if it's okay, I'm just going to include a sideline, little program here that it was suggested to me that I do. So on this table over here are brochures for Anabaptist Refugee Committee, and you are welcome to pick one of those up. And if you'd like to know more about it, Shelley here has served with ARC. I have as well. And be happy to tell you more about it. But it basically is an organization that is responding to the refugee, crisis needs that are happening, that are going on more recently for the Afghans. So you're welcome to look at that. I would be curious to know what sorts of expectations and interests you have in coming here this afternoon. So we won't take a poll or anything like that. What I do recognize, though, is that there may be a wide variety of interest and expectation. However, I hope all of you can be challenged in some way or another. What we're not going to do is attempt to create another crisis and keep you in the room and make you conscripts or something like that for serving in crisis situations. But nonetheless, you'll be able to hear maybe how God may have you be involved in some way or another. Maybe it's even through a better understanding and encouragement for others. So my goal basically in a broad sense is to inspire interest and vision for how you can be involved. What I hope to do to include in our time here is some, intersections and insights that I've had as well in some of these things being abroad. So I hope you're fine with that. I put a little outline on the board here in very brief form. I guess we could say in general, my thought is that crisis equals opportunity. And generally that equals sign, we use it when we are suggesting an equivalence between two things. Do you find equivalence between crisis and opportunity? I guess could be the question. And maybe you agree or disagree. But I believe that as children of God who are called into the world to be in it and move among people where there's chaos or where there's crisis, there's opportunity for being the people of God. Jesus once walked on the earth and found many opportunities to bless and encourage others. Maybe we should define what crisis is. Already we suggested that crisis equals opportunity, but maybe that needs some definition too. In general, crisis, as we want to think about it, is the point where something is disrupted. Something is disrupted in an overbearing way where there is chaos, where there is abnormality. Things are not normal. What is now is we tend to compare, or the people in that situation tend to compare to what was. And we struggle with the difference because it's very different. The crisis has hit and we deal with the contrast. We make an effort to sort the difference and understand it. Those responding to crisis enter into this scenario from a more blissful platform. Usually, we get on the flight in America and we happily cruise to the other part of the world in comfort, and we generally find ways to take some comfort with us so that we're at some ease while we're there. And then we hit into this crisis scenario. We're faced dead on with it, and we're faced with people who are smack in the middle of it and trying to make sense of it. Maybe that's a crisis in and of itself in some way, is how we then in turn interface and interact with what's going on. So what is disrupted? Well, when you look at it in the scenario, it seems like it's everything. It's life. Sometimes it's the human body that's disrupted. Many times religion and faith is having some crisis about that time. Family, maybe it's a family member who's died or been handicapped. Community's disrupted. Often there are displaced people. And so you'll have families who are separated, communities who are separated, various things like this. Business, infrastructure, environment, so many things. Sometimes it's a correct use of the word a blasted environment. One time in a visit to Mosul, there was a Mosul doctor who told us, just to clarify, I'm talking about the Mosul conflict when ISIS had control of the city a couple years ago and there was a fight to regain the city from ISIS. The Mosul doctor said, all of Mosul has PTSD. We all need help. He said even he himself had PTSD. And that about sums it up. Now, we looked at many external things that we face and that are disrupted, but inside there's disruption too. And sometimes you don't see it. So, what should we say? What should we respond? How are we going to enter this scenario? How are we going to respond? What are we going to say? And how can we keep from being stalled or submerged by the chaos and the crisis around? Because one can get this feeling that there's crisis everywhere. Everyone and everything is in crisis. And what to do and how shall I start? And so one can feel like they are immobile. How to even begin? We want to talk about crisis primarily as it relates to natural and man-made disasters, but even these are different. If you think about it, man-made disasters, people often talk about it in the context of the hand of God or something like that. We ascribe it to the power of God or what God can do. Man-made disasters, meanwhile, are often thought of as evil and sinister because it's the heart of man going after its aims and ends, and they come into conflict. Jesus, meanwhile, came not to be served, but to serve. We sing the song that he went about doing good. And he did that with love. Basically, the request of a crisis situation, what it begs from me, what it begs from someone in that environment, is that people are ready to serve and do good one at a time, a place at a time, and time by time. You get this feeling that in such a scenario, you can't save the world. And literally, you can't. A person can't. So, serving in crisis situations asks for other-centeredness, for forbearance, for flexibility. Let's go to the first question, the first point. Looking at serving in crisis situations as it relates to God, number one. And the question I have there is, whose am I? When a person enters a crisis scenario, and by the way, if everyone in this room ends up doing that, thank God. But I know that's not the call for everyone. But nonetheless, it may come closer home than we think. So the question, whose am I? This is a proper place to start out when we're thinking of engaging with crisis situations. Because if I don't know whose I am, well, then maybe I'm just there on my own. Maybe it's just a career choice or something like that. Going to a difficult place so that I can make more money in my career path or something like that. So to whom do I answer? Am I answering to myself? Am I doing the best that I can in this crisis? Or do I belong to someone? I had this little, it wasn't a crisis, it was a little scenario with a captain in Iraq. And he wanted to know, what am I doing in Iraq? So I'm there and I'm interacting with people. There's a crisis, right? So, but he wants to know, what's up with this? So he asked me some questions. He pulled me aside, and we know him as a bit of a cantankerous captain, but nonetheless, we had to deal with him. His question for me came and sat me down in his office, and he's ready to just drill it into me, find out what's going on. His question was, who do you work for? And it came to me like this. I said, I work for God. When you do like, in Iraq, when they don't understand, he goes, I said, who do you work for? I said, I work for God. And then he kind of thought about that. And then he says, well, where do you work? I said, where God wants me to. No, I said, where do you work? I said, where God wants me to. Well, I kind of had a reason for talking to him like that, because I wasn't really interested in giving him a lot of details about it. But all to say that whose I am, that's really the way it's supposed to be in every situation, is if I'm working for God, then I can go straight forward in his plan and I don't have to really worry about my program. As I said, some folks do humanitarian work as a career, but they tend to be insulated. And what was really strange for me is when we'd come into scenarios in these foreign places and people would say, oh, what is your protocol? What is your protocol for, you know, being in the camp or for interacting with these people? What are your safety measures? And I don't know, it really felt rather strange. But some folks basically get in their car at their home, drive to work maybe in an armored car, and get out and walk into their office and then go back home at the end of the day. And I said, wow, that sounds like a dry bite. But how are we going to interface with those who are in crisis and present Christ if we're insulated? There's that insulation that has to come away. One night we were ferrying some stuff for displaced people inside a camp, and it was getting late into the night. It was muddy. It was dark. It was a big mess. And so we were going back and forth, and I had an Iraqi man from the camp with me, and we came upon a man that had fallen into a ditch, literally. It was dark, and so he fell in, and so we put him in the pickup and took him to his tent and kept on going. It was maybe half a year later where this Iraqi fellow who was with me that night was in a tent with some of the rest of our group. The man that fell in the ditch entered the tent, and the man who was the Iraqi man who was with me got all excited, and he said, that was the night we were working for God. And we talked about that a lot, was working for God. And he said they associated that night as we were working for God. And it's a lot more than that, too. What do I believe? We're talking about whose am I? What do I believe, and how does my belief in God affect what I do? Basically, my presentation of God. Is it something that we obscure, or is it part of our DNA? One family in Northeast Syria camp said, we like when you come to our tent to do the burn care, and even if there is no burn care, come anyway. and because they like when we come. And they said, the father said, maybe he will have to burn himself so that we will have to come to their tent again. They liked when we were with them. And that's one of the lessons that Jesus gave when he was here on the earth, was he demonstrated his name, Emmanuel, which was God with us. Not God as far away as we can get, but God with us. And he wants us to do the same. I told them about the story of the Dutch couple in the 1600s, who had their roof taken off and removed. They were really intrigued by that. I said, what do you think you would have done, or the Muslims would have done? They said, I think they would shoot them. That is, the people who came and took the roof off, if you're familiar with that story. The robbers came, the bad men came, took the roof off, or started. The Dutch couple fed them. The men went out, put the roof back on. I asked them, what do you think the Muslim would do? That was their response. Another thing that we encounter when we are out there is, can I trust the sovereignty of God in this crisis? You hear story after story. This is what happened to me. My son died. Or one thing or another. My house is flat. I went back and I don't have anything. Or health problem because of the scenario. What do you say? How do you explain it? Where is God in it? Is God present in chaos? And can chaos accomplish God's purposes? What God does offer, what he wants to offer, are people who can be out there for him ministering. That he does want, and he can accomplish his purposes. Another question is, how does my view of the scriptures and obedience to God look in crisis situations? So we're Amish, Mennonite, Anabaptist, and so forth. What are some of the distinctives that are imperative when I talk about whose am I? Who am I representing? Can I love my neighbor? Now, when it gets a little tighter is, what if your neighbor is your enemy? Then what do you do? Now, what's interesting is the countries, the politics, the political people, they can be enemies. But you and I and the people in crisis can be brothers. Brothers of the earth. We all have red blood. Yes, 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 they will say. We do. So we can be friends. So when there's no politics, I'm a non-political person, I can explain that to them, and it frees them up. It frees us up to be friends. If I am any given political party, and we have to relate on those terms, then we have to see, what is our party position? What does our party say? What does their party say? How are we going to align these things? Oh, oops. Can't be friends. We're unaligned. If, on the other hand, we are followers in Christ, of Christ in his kingdom, no politics. This is really important. This can't be overestimated. You come back to America, it's like, wow, they're slugging politics around everywhere. But in that setting, you understand that politics really do have to go. It can't be part of our portfolio. The other thing is, if we can be truly loving our enemy, you can talk about that and say, look, if you're the Taliban or you're ISIS or you're whoever you are, why can't we be friends? I don't have a gun. I'm not going to be using any such thing against you. Why not? Why not be friends? And that's a bit disarming if we are, as they say, innocent in that sort of way. That's a big deal, too. So we must do all for God's glory. All right, so the question of regarding me Who are you? This question is sometimes asked and sometimes not asked. But in general, this is the question they are asking in a crisis situation, even if they are not asking it. It's the question, who are you? Now, they ask things like, what do you do? And where are you from? And what do you do here? Or why do you do this? But what they're really trying to drill at is, who are you? And there's a lot in that idea. They want to know, what is your association? What is your purpose? What is it in regards to them? A stranger working in a crisis situation is curious, especially when the stranger has come from America where it's all nice and all people in crisis, not all people in crisis, so many people in the world would like to come to America. It's like heaven. Okay, so why have you left heaven, as it were? Very strange. Like, this is not fun. And you're in this situation. So why, therefore, who? In one camp, the question was asked, why did you come here? I said, we came to help. They said, to help? You came to help. You mean, you say you came to help? They said, and then they turned around and said to the rest, hey, did you hear that? This man said that he came to help. He said, I haven't heard this one in 2 years. Someone came to help. And they spoke English. That's why I could understand it. So I know it's true. I didn't have a translator that was English. Another question was, why do you want to come here? They said, it's hot here. We don't want to be here, but you come. So why would you even think of coming? Who are you? Why do you care? Why does it matter? If a few more people die, if a few more people go hungry, or a few more people don't have what they need, why? What's the big deal? A couple very forceful women, ISIS women. Well, they called me a kafir, which is a heathen. That was the first time I was informed of that directly. But they said, what are you going to do? This was in a camp. They said, what are you going to do? You just came to look. You just came for vacation. You just wanted to come and look at us. If you aren't going to help us, you can go home. And this was done in very staccato, one after the next sentences, not really giving much time to explain. They were grieved. How do we talk to them? Another question that can be asked with who are you is, what is your intention? Are you here to help me or hinder me? Are you for me or against me? My wife, Rhonda, in the back, and Mary, there, both nurses assisted a lady who, in this one camp, she was in a bad way physically, but religion-wise, she was a really tough lady, and her daughters were even more so. And we came to her place to try to help her out. She had a big wound. That's an understatement. And they wanted to help. When they first began to help, when they would come to the tent, the daughters were very hostile and antagonistic. They were playing videos with, ISIS videos, like ISIS preachers preaching away in the black flag flying on their phones. Very antagonistic, very tight with the ladies. But we kept coming back. We didn't let that dissuade us. And they recognized the persistence, but more importantly, the love that came with that. And as time went on, they began to soften up and they began to communicate and talk. And at some point, we had to leave and go back, leave the area. We were done for that period of time. Later, we came back to visit, and the lady had died. And her daughters talked about our having come, what her mother had to say, and so forth. And they thanked us, as I recall, for coming and helping them, helping their mother in that period of time. Completely different perspective after we had spent time with them and they understood. They were needing to, they were asking the question, who are you and what is your intention? Even included with that is something about, included in that is how what you believe, how does what you believe enter into what you do? What's oozing out of that? What are they, what can they understand from that? They want to know who you're associated with. And what I found interesting in this part of the world is they don't want to know just your organization, for example, but they want to know, yeah, they want to know about it, and then they can evaluate what you say and what you do, and they can make comparison. They're very swift at putting pieces together, and they know, they can begin to understand if you are authentic in what you're doing, if you are here, for example, for God, or if you're there for yourself. We would talk about the church, kanise, and that was often what we told them. Who are you people? What are you doing? We're with the church. Some people, they didn't really want to acknowledge if they're really ideologically strong Muslims or something, but many times they would say, oh, okay, this is very good, this is very good. And many times they would recognize the church as being that entity in the world who was doing good. So what do they see? I asked one man in the camp one time. I said, so what do the people in this camp, is a bit of a rough and tough camp. Yeah, a bit rough and tough. And they said, I said, so what did the people in the camp say? I'm just curious to know, like, when they see us, they look at us, they see us moving in the camp, we're doing burn care for people. We do our burn care in the tents. So it's kind of an in-house tent visit. That's with design, because then we can get personal. We can occasionally pray for people, talk about things, talk about questions, and so forth. The more close and personal it gets, the more you can intersect. Drink their tea, eat their food. Some of the people say, oh, no, we don't eat the food in the tent. Oh, no, it's dirty. You might get disease or something. Or, oh, the chai. Oh, no, our organization has a rule about that. Can't do that. Well, that's exactly what we like to do, because then you intersect. You drink their chai, it means there's something about you having received them. And when you receive them, it means you're loving them, they're more prepared to hear about who are you. This also happened in contexts such as checkpoints, government offices, camp management. Once again, who are you? They need to know, who is that? In one case, I had to work on who we are through Oreo cookies and an Amish calendar. And it really worked perfectly. We were having a lot of trouble with our folks getting back from camp through in this checkpoint, and they would keep stopping them and saying, oh, you have to go talk to the captain because you don't have this or that, or why don't you have this permission or something. And I was really tired of it. So I went up to the captain and I said, look, I want you to understand who we are. I want to answer this question. You know, we're with the church. We're here to assist and help. And basically, we're even assisting you, in other words, your country. And so this is who we are. This is where we come from. These are the types of people who are supporting. This is how we think of faith, community, family, these sorts of things. And I took him through the Amish calendar. And then I said, now, here are the Oreo cookies. You're supposed to enjoy these, give them to all the people at the checkpoint. Okay. And wouldn't you know, it did seem to solve the problem pretty significantly. We rarely had a problem after that. Something else that sometimes I would do is I would tell them to look at my face. Okay, take a look. Next time I'm in this checkpoint, let's make this easier because, you know who I am. Let's not do this over and over. Again, contact point. Who are you? Be resolute in that. Another side thing is while we're in that scenario, it takes a lot from us. And so restoration, rest, we can say survival, but even rejuvenation. How does that happen? Maybe we could put it like this. Is it survival of the fittest or is it thrival of the balanced? I don't know that that's actually a technical English word, but I think it works. If there's a survival, shouldn't there be a thrival? But a thrival of the balanced. Now, we may need help with that. Others to help us in being balanced because that is a challenge. It seems like there's always the next thing and the next thing to do and you can't stop. Because there's always more. But we are not called to save the world. God puts in front of us who we are to serve. Now, the last one, others. Am I being a neighbor? Am I being a neighbor? I do that on purpose because often we ask the question, and who is my neighbor? That was the question that the rich man asked in the New Testament to Jesus. Now, if we look at that story really quickly, who was it that came and took care of the man in crisis? There was a man in crisis. He was beside the road, probably, and seemed like he was bleeding and so forth. He needed help. He was in crisis. Who helped him? Was it the fellow citizens? Or was it the foreigner? The Samaritans were generally recognized as an enemy. Maybe they wouldn't say enemy, but some people would take the long route around the Samaritan area just so they wouldn't have to go through the Samaritan territory. So the Samaritan was in proximity. I like the word proximity. He was in proximity to the wounded man. Maybe that's what we need to understand is to whom does God put us in a proximate location or in proximity to? Who am I near to? Now, I think one of the ways we can make excuses about this is to say, okay, in that case, if proximity is key, let's just stay home. Let's not go outside. If I don't go outside, I will not come into proximity to anyone, and therefore I don't need to be a neighbor to anyone because I'm not proximate. Fortunately, Matthew, Jesus, the Great Commission in Matthew says, go into all the world. If we do that, we're going to run into people, and therefore we'll have to be in proximity to people, and therefore we'll have to be a good Samaritan. There was a man that I came into contact with in the days of the fighting in Mosul. And I have to admit, I had a struggle with him at the beginning because I met him in a school. He was essentially under arrest, although he wasn't in chains. There supposedly is an accused ISIS man. There were Iraqi soldiers around there, and they told him to clean up the place. And I was watching him. They said, it's ISIS. Okay. And so I was watching him. So they had him clean up the bathrooms. And I was thinking, wonder what Jesus would do. Should I help him clean up the bathroom? And I'm thinking, there's water bottles everywhere. And I'm thinking what to do with that. I'm struggling a bit with it because I'm kind of resisting the idea. And then later, I was outside. They brought him, this ISIS, accused ISIS man outside. The Iraqi army was interrogating him and they were asking other people, hey, do you know this man? Do you know what he's doing? What's up with him? And then it was all said and done. They took him inside and they were kind of kicking him around and stuff. And one of the Iraqi soldiers is just like, hey, we're talking signs and wonders. We know what we're talking about. He's like, do I want to have this job to take care of this man? Well, I can't give him a theological, talk about all of this. And so he's talking Arabic. I'm talking English. So I said, I cannot. I get that's the core of the matter. Could go deeper. So, okay, went back in, and then they had him sweeping up the floor. And they had him sweeping up the floor, and I said, okay, I need to get involved somehow. Then there was another American lady in there, and she was helping with another broom. So I'm looking around, and I find a broom, and I start cleaning up along the wall. So he's putting trash in, and you can tell kind of like, you know, like looking at what's going on. I'm supposed to be doing this job, and it's dirty, right? It's a dirty job. I mean, this is not like a nice job. The army is forcing me to do this, but these funny people are helping. Well, what's up with this? So we started helping him. We got to the end, and another man came over, and he said, we want you to know that we love you, and we forgive you if you were involved with ISIS. And at that point, the man started crying, and I just could not believe my eyes. This was translated to him, and he started just weeping right there. And I got a little insight into what happens when love is exercised. And later the translator was telling me, he said, you hurt his heart. I said, what does that mean? He's like, I said, so you mean something, his heart got soft and it was spoken to. He's like, yeah, yeah, like that one. I said, okay. So I don't know, later Mohammed was his name, was taken out of the place along with three others. He was blindfolded later that afternoon. I do not know what became of him. I don't know if he's still living or not. But people are experiencing disruption of normality. They're experiencing trauma from fleeing, from the house coming down, from the earthquake, from trying to run from combat as a civilian. They're experiencing loss. Their religious world is perhaps exploded. What is this about religion? If one Muslim is fighting another Muslim, brother fighting brother, and we both believe in God, and they hurl these accusations like, oh yeah, ISIS, they are not Muslim, no good. And ISIS, meanwhile, is fighting and saying, no, the Iraqi army, they're kafirs, they don't fear God, they are not Muslims. So they're both Muslims and they're both not Muslims. And they're trying to process all this, and it's not making sense. One imam said, I'll have to give my people some time after the fighting in Mosul. I can't force them to come to mosque because they're struggling too much. I have to wait a bit. It's a very fascinating observation. So where are we at? Maybe I should ask this question. There was a fellow who said, so you Anabaptists, so you believe in non-resistance. You believe in non-resistance, you don't take the gun. So, but he raised this question to me. It's sort of an ultimatum kind of question. He said, so why aren't your people on the front lines? Why aren't they on the front lines? So is it because you're scared? So you can't have a gun. So you're scared? Is it because you're just letting the other people do the dirty work? Or what's up with that? It's kind of an ultimatum. I wonder what you'd have to say to it. When you're kind of right there in the middle of the crisis and you actually physically see the people running and experiencing loss, and then you think of all that we have here, you sort of wonder what to do with that. Why do we cringe at crisis? Crisis represents a scenario that's out of our control, and we do not like to be out of control. Anabaptists, Amish and Mennonites, traditionally, Germans are really, really good, and others too. But we like to set up systems that, I don't know, I think we like to smooth out the wrinkles, make things tick a little better. We like to insulate ourselves. In general, I think we like comfort. We like to increase comfort, to maximize it. So this is kind of a pain solution. How do we make it better? So we don't really like crisis. We've also enjoyed being the quiet in the land. It seems to me that we trend toward, when we think of being quiet in the land, associated with this idea is eradication of need, or at least minimizing it as much as possible. But crisis exposes our need. It blasts it open, wide open. Normality is gone. As I said, crisis can include crisis of faith. And where are the Christians to talk to them about faith in that time? That's a very strategic time. Where there is need, there's usually openness to filling of the need, right? That's natural. It is a bit, can be a bit of a conundrum for them if they're strong Muslims, for example. When kafirs means heathens, non-Muslims, heathens, heathen people who the radical groups would say should be killed, when the kafirs come and love you and smile at you and help you, what are you supposed to do with a kafir then? That's tough. But to do that, there has to be some proximity. A few questions. Am I being a neighbor? Am I being proximate as I go, including here? Am I being a neighbor? Jesus switched it up to, who is my neighbor? Not ISIS, not Taliban, nope. Not that country, nope. He switched it up from, who is my neighbor? Let's parse it out to, go and be one. That's the question, am I being a neighbor? Am I giving effort to reduction of risk and discomfort, which is a focus to myself, or am I giving effort to what God wants? We make effort to bless and assist and serve because we have been blessed. Have we not? We have. And shouldn't Christians be the best doctors and nurses and trauma counselors and spiritual advisors that there are? If we say yeah, then what are we going to do about it? Now, again, I recognize that's not cut out for all of us in the same sorts of ways, but I encourage us to push on that one. And finally, the Good Samaritan wasn't asked if assisting the man in crisis was in his comfort zone. He just did it. The need was there, and he got involved. We don't let crisis move on when it's in front of us. Let's seize the opportunities. In the crisis, wounds are open. The man's wound was open. Can we be one who pours oil in? Are there any questions? I didn't warn you, but maybe you have questions. You're welcome to raise them.
So what do you suggest about the frontline business? The guy's question. You have an answer to that? Should we just recruit? I don't know, everybody 30 and younger here. Well, what would it look like if you were to show up on the front lines, so to speak?
Yeah. So the question is, what would happen if should we show up on the front lines? How would it look like? Well, when we were in the middle of one of those sorts of scenarios, and there were times when we could hear, you know, bombs whistling in and curtains would move and stuff like this. And we thought about that. And one of my analysis was, well, maybe if we would do something like that, it would have to be called Crazy Anabaptist to the Front Lines. Yeah. yes, it is a bit of a challenge. One would have to, people have to be thoughtful and discreet, not bold and courageous, but not, but thoughtful. So it is possible to help near the front lines. There is a great deal of needs that can be met without carrying a gun. Many. The main thing is, though, that if guns are not carried, if peaceful people go to help, then thoughtful strategy needs to be given to it. But I do feel that it can be done, and I would wish that it could be done. It's not for everyone. There's where people, you know, hurt people are coming in. There's noise. and so forth sometimes. So it's an undulating place. But I would say I feel that there's room for it with Anabaptist, with thoughtfulness. And I suspect that there would be interest.
These are trauma teams?
They could be trauma teams, yeah. One of the places where we worked was what they called CCPs, casualty collection points, and that was kind of a frontline location where injured people, whether ISIS, civilians, military, anybody, you have a wound. It's kind of like bundle you up quick and send you to the hospital kind of scenario. So that is a place where people can go. It takes fortitude.
Is that what this gentleman was talking about? Why aren't you?
Yes.
Why aren't you there in the danger zone, so to speak?
Correct. Why aren't we in the danger zone? He said, basically, you talk about being non-resistance, you don't carry guns, but then you don't help where there's big problems.
Okay.
This was his contention.
Is there any Red Cross there at all?
Yes, there is Red Cross. I don't recall seeing Red Cross in that position. They're back in the city, in the camps, and so forth. And they may be helping indirectly with blood and so forth. I don't think I remember seeing them that near the front line. Yeah, have not. But there tend to be the small groups, these little vigorous groups that manage to get to the front line and assist. They're around. They're not big names, generally.
Do you sense more openness on the front line, would you say? I mean, you mentioned that in the crisis, the wounds are more open,
mm-hmm.
or at least are open. Is it worse, or is there more openness when you get right out there on the front line?
So the question is it more open on the front line versus later, perhaps? Each in its time and season, because in the front line, basically what you're doing, you tend to be doing something fast and quick, and the people keep moving. However, it's possible to see those people later. And so that is not lost at all. Especially as Anabaptists, we're more distinctive. And so there's some understanding of something is going on here. They're Americans. I'm sure they're Americans, but what is up with them? And so there's going to be some chatter about it, probably, and they'll probably figure it out. So in that sense, there's opportunity. And then later, when things are calm and you're in a camp or out of that scenario, then you have time to talk more, even if it's not the same people. But it's a network, right? Even as we have networks here, word gets around. So some is quick and some is longer term.
So being there in the front line could open a door later.
Oh, yeah.
More so.
Absolutely. The Army comes to understand who are you. There's a lot of respect that tends to come with the fact that you came without a gun. So there's opportunity. Okay, my time is finished. I'll be around afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.